Okay, tonight I want to pick up where we left off in Psalm 33. And if everybody said, we'll just go ahead and get going. It says, sing for joy in the Lord, O you righteous ones. Praise is becoming to the upright. Give thanks to the Lord with a lyre. Sing praises to him with a harp of 10 strings. Sing to him a new song. Play skillfully with a shout of joy. For the word of the Lord is upright, and all his work is done in faithfulness. He loves righteousness and justice. The earth is full of the loving kindness of the Lord. By the word of the Lord, the heavens were made. Now, you know, before we go on further, let's just back up to what it's saying here. Because it's very easy, I think, to just read something like this, especially the first four verses, and it just says, well, that's nice and poetic. But if we really stop and break it down and analyze it, I do think it says a lot to us. Because it says, sing for joy in the Lord, O you righteous ones, praise is becoming to the upright. And it just boils down to this: giving God thanks, giving him praise, giving him honor, giving him glory. I mean, just to take a look at all the blessings that we've been given in this life. I mean, they are actually innumerable. I know the devil always kind of is always there to just point out all the things that, let's say, we don't have, or what's going wrong in our life, or the difficulties we may be encountering, or whatever. But I tell you, if you look around and see that the blessings that God has bestowed upon us individually, collectively, as a nation, there's just so much to really be grateful for. But I've said so many times over the years that ungratefulness, it really shows a smallness of a person's character. You know, there's so many things that we just simply, we don't stop to think about. We don't stop to analyze, or just stop and look at how blessed we are with the things that God has given us. Now, I know that sounds kind of trite, but just break it down. It says, sing for joy in the Lord, O you righteous ones. Praise is becoming to the upright. In other words, there's one thing I think that God has a short fuse for, and that's murmuring, griping, complaining, finding fault, tearing down, rather than taking a look and just thanking God for everything he does for us. It says, give thanks to the Lord with a lyre and sing praises to him with a harp of 10 strings. Now, that's something I can't do. I can't carry a tune in a bucket, but I tell you what, I really do thank God all the time, constantly, day and night. I mean, you know, there's so many things that I am really, really grateful for. I'm really appreciative. And I don't say that in a boastful sense. I just say that, man, there's so many things that we just take for granted. Just the ordinary things. Like, you know I've mentioned this before, but the fact that the world is like two-thirds covered with water, but what would the world be like? I mean, what would it be like to die of thirst? I mean, that's the thing. I know, I've gone several days without, you know, anything to drink and or anything to eat. And I'll tell you, after the second, third day, you know, you all you can think about is just, you know, getting something to drink. And I hardly ever take a glass of water without every swallow, just thanking the Lord. Just thanking him in my heart, man. This is, you know, I think of Jesus Christ when he says that he's the living water. It's one of the most ordinary things you could think of, is just drinking a glass of water. But I tell you what, try to imagine what it would be like to die of thirst. You know, that would be an excruciatingly painful way to go, right? But these are things that we just don't think about. We don't give God a second thought about these things that he has just given us. I mean, there's so many things to be grateful for. There's so many things, you know, I will never see a person who's an invalid, a person in a wheelchair, a person walking with a cane or a limp, or a person who's blind or deaf, or, you know, really has some serious, physical problems or whatever. And I just don't stop and just thank God. Thank God for my health. I thank God for what he's blessed me with. I mean, I really think that we really need to do that, rather than just looking around. And I mean, it's just, maybe this is a kind of a lame thing, but I tell you what, I go out to Folsom all the time. I injured my foot, so I haven't been able to jog for several weeks, but I still walk, and I go and I pick up all this trash. But it's amazing all the trash I pick up. And I just can't help but think that, you know, people are just ungrateful pigs. You know, they just throw all their garbage, throw their trash, their beer bottles, their cans, their soda bottles, and then they just throw it out the window, you know, right there. And I'm thinking, you know, this is such a beautiful place that God's given us, but it's like people just trash it, and it just shows such a smallness of character, and it shows such an ungrateful spirit. rather than looking out there and saying, man, Lord, I just really, really appreciate this creation of yours. It's so beautiful. It's so invigorating, refreshing. It's just such a peaceful experience just to witness being part of this. But we just take all this for granted. Yeah.
Another thing to take it for granted is ordinary is the water you mentioned earlier is sitting here in the evening time, then not worry about some deadly mosquito that give you some West Nile virus or whatever, because in China there was no screen on the door, on the window, and you couldn't come in the house without worry about being bitten by mosquito, and there's cockroaches, and there's snake, and there's lizard, and there's all sorts of pestilence in the house, and all these things that it's part of the living with human. And then when we came over here, you can sleep at night without mosquito net. It's like free.
No,
you
crawling
can see
on
the ceiling. You can look around. Well, now people want it to be romantic and they put the mosquito net. That's what happens. That is just a bondage, and we're free. And why do you want to put things for ambience?
Yeah.
But anyway, so it's ordinary, it's water.
Yeah.
And the other thing, you're mentioning how you take everything for granted. I mean, a lot of people it doesn't even phase them to think of how unique this earth is. It's completely unique. And all the water and all the stuff that's on this earth, it's just totally suited for us. And you look around all over the universe, and we're not finding the same thing. Mm-hmm. And I was reading something the other day about how, like you're saying, the water is totally necessary, refreshes us, and it's totally necessary for our existence. I found this article I was reading, it said that not only do we have the water around the earth, but 400 miles down, there's a pool of water in the earth that contains more water than the whole surface of the earth. And they just found that out.
Yeah, did it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and I was thinking, remember the pools, the deep breaking up?
Yeah. Well, that, yeah. Yeah.
There's more water in the earth than there is on the surface.
Yeah, under the earth.
Yes,
yeah, right.
Yes.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, I read that, the Amazon River, one of the longest rivers in the world, and they discovered a couple of years back, that they discovered another river running underneath the Amazon River. You know, I'm just simply saying this. I mean, you look at God's creation, and, it really, I think, is something that we just take for granted. We take for granted, and we don't realize how fortunate we are. And like Shum was saying, well, she comes from China, and they do not have so many of the blessings that we have. But here's the thing. This country's on its way out. This country's on its way down. All of the blessings that God has given us. I mean, it says very clearly in Deuteronomy chapter 27-28, God said, look, if you begin to act with more and more hostility towards me, you begin to act with more and more defiance towards me, and you begin to, defy me and my moral laws, this type of thing. He says all these curses that he lists will overtake you. And I always like that word overtake, because it means it comes from behind. We don't have our eyes in the back of our head to see this coming. These curses overtake us. But, and then there was so many things that God, I was just talking about water, but look at this state. And this is today's Wednesday's USA Today. It says California's 100-year drought, fierce fires, agricultural losses, severe water shortage, a threat to civilization. And it says California is in the third year of one of the state's worst droughts in the past century, one that has led to fierce wildfires, water shortages, and restrictions, and potentially staggering agricultural losses. But does anybody realize that that's spiritual? This is God speaking to us, because he said that one of the curses that would come upon us is the fact that, I'm going to make your sky like bronze and your earth like iron. And yet, interesting thing, it's like nobody seems to stop and make the connection. Okay, we're in a severe drought. I mean, it is really scary, right? What we're in, up to our eyeballs, but nobody seems to make the connection. This is spiritual. This is God's curse. This is God speaking to us. This is God's warning. This is God's, basically, one of his warning signs that we need to turn away from our sins. We need to break away from them. We need to turn back to him. But we're just going on with all this defiance. It's amazing that in the midst of one of the most severe droughts in this state's history, we continue to just defy God with our moral laws, trampling them underfoot. Nobody's repenting. We're just getting deeper and deeper into what? Lying, cheating, stealing, conniving, swindling, conning, adulterizing, sodomizing. Just go down the line. And, all this is leading to is just, you know, more curses. It just flat out is. We're just cursed everywhere. As a matter of fact, when we had that earthquake just last week, the USA Today, Sacramento Bee, and I believe it was San Francisco Chronicle all used the term wake-up call. But the wake-up call that they're talking about is this is a wake-up call. They probably said, well, they woke people up in the morning, but they were trying to imply, well, here's a wake-up call in terms of we need to improve our infrastructure so that we don't have more casualties and more property damage in the future. But the wake-up call is from God. The wake-up call is from heaven, all right? But nobody seems to put this together. It's another wake-up call. And this world has not seen anything yet. Well, we got an earthquake coming where every mountain is going to be brought low. Every island is going to be moved out of its place. The whole entire globe is going to be shaking. Everything's coming down. I don't care whether it's the Empire State Building, the Sears Tower, the Eiffel Tower, the Golden Gate Bridge, the pyramids of Egypt, throw it out there. Yeah, we got an earthquake coming, you and I believe. But see, we don't listen to God. All of these things, and I would say this, it starts with just an ungrateful heart, ungrateful spirit, because what does it say in Romans? It says that for the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men who suppress the truth and unrighteousness, because that which is known about God is evident within them, for God made it evident to them. For since the creation of the world, his invisible attributes, his eternal power and divine nature have been clearly seen, being understood through what has been made. So they are without excuse, for even though they knew God, they did not honor him as God or give thanks, but they became futile in their speculation, and their foolish heart was darkened. See, that's where it begins. It begins with an ungrateful spirit. It begins with just being an ungrateful pig. And we're becoming a nation of ungrateful pigs. I'm not kidding you. But this is what it says right there in the Romans. This is our major malfunction right here. For even though they knew God, they did not honor him as God or give thanks, but they became futile in their speculations and their foolish heart was darkened. Just to so much that we take for granted, and this country has been blessed immeasurably. From sea to shining sea, man. But we're on our way out. We're on our way down. All these blessings are now evaporating, and so many curses are now coming from behind. They're overtaking us, but people don't have the good grace to see it. That's why it says in Psalm 33, verse 4, it says, for the word of the Lord is upright, and all his work is done in faithfulness. You know, everything he's done has been, he's done it in faithfulness for man's well-being. In every way. He says in verse 5, he loves righteousness and justice. The earth is full of the loving kindness of the Lord. Just look around and you see the loving kindness of God. Just look around. But now, you know, now we're in this state, we were just really hurting as far as water. All God has to do is just turn off the spigot. Mm-hmm. But what happens? And it doesn't seem like we can make that connection that, well, this is God speaking to us. This is another wake-up call. This is another warning. And he says in verse 6, he says, but by the word of the Lord, the heavens were made, and by the breath of his mouth, all their hosts, he gathers the water of the sea together in a heap. He lays up the deeps in storehouses. Let all the earth fear the Lord. Let all the inhabitants of the world stand in awe of him. For he spoke and it was done. He commanded and it was stood fast. The Lord nullifies the counsel of the nations. Now, look what it's saying here in that verse 6. By the word of the Lord, the heavens were made, and by the breath of his mouth, all their hosts. And, you know, this is something that I think we have really minimized to the point where evolution has become the God, the new God, that we just all evolved. But I'm telling you, like in Revelation chapter 10, when John sees this magnificent angel, he's got one foot on the sea, one foot on the earth. His feet are on fire, and he's clothed with a cloud, and he's got a rainbow around his head, and he swears by him who lives forever and ever. It says this, then the angel whom I saw standing on the sea and on the land lifted up his right hand to heaven and swore by him who lives forever and ever, who created the heavens and the things in it, and the earth and the things in it, and the sea and the things in it, that there will be delay no longer. In other words, you almost have to emphasize that this whole universe, cosmos, didn't come out of just a big bang out of nowhere. Just as God had created it. In Revelation chapter 4, it says this, worthy are you, O Lord, and our God, to receive glory and honor and power, for you created all things, and because of your will, they existed and were created. You know, it didn't come out of a big bang out of nowhere. And then you go back to, interesting thing, you go back to Genesis, of course, and in Genesis chapter 1, It says this, and God saw that all he had made, and behold, it was very good, and there was evening, and there was morning, the sixth day. Thus the heavens and the earth were completed, and all their hosts. By the seventh day, God completed his work, which he had done, and he rested on the seventh day from all his work, which he had done. Now, either that's a gross, flagrant lie, it's a God's honest truth, but everybody's telling, well, he didn't, God didn't create the world in 6 days, there's no way in hell that he did that, because science proves otherwise. I'm telling you, science does not prove otherwise. But also in Exodus, right smack in the middle of the commandments, right smack in the middle of the commandments, God says, listening to his commandments, he says that you shall not worship any other god besides him. And then he goes on to say this, and he says, and you shall not take the name of the Lord your God in vain. And then he says, remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath of the Lord your God, and in it you shall not do any work, you or your son or your daughter or your male or your female servant or your cattle or your sojourner who stays with you. For, or because, in 6 days the Lord made the heavens and the earth and the sea and all that is in them, and rested on the seventh day. Therefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and made it holy. And then he lists the other commandments. Honor your mother, father and mother. Thou shalt not murder. Shalt not commit adultery. Shalt not steal. Shalt not bear false witness. Now, all I'm saying is this. Well, okay, if you're going to insist that, hey, God didn't create this world in 6 days, there's no way in hell he did, because, you know, science says otherwise, well, then it's right smack in the middle of commandments. Well, then when he said, thou shalt not murder, we could throw that out too. Thou shalt not commit adultery, throw that out. Thou shalt not steal, throw that out. I mean, just pick and choose. But here's my point. I don't care, you can get all the academic eggheads of all history to try to, you know, tell you that this world, that this universe, that this cosmos, that our solar system is almost 5 billion years old, and our universe is something like 15 billion years old. But I got a question for you. You know, when the devil tempted Jesus Christ and he says, hey, if you're really a son of God, why don't you turn these stones into loaves of bread? And, of course, Jesus Christ refuted him from Deuteronomy, saying that man does not live on bread alone, but every word that proceeds from the mouth of God. Because Jesus Christ most certainly could have taken these stones and turned them into bread. Mm-hmm. But now let's just say he did this instead. Let's just say he took a loaf of bread and turned it into a stone, which he most certainly could have done. Now, you could take that stone and you could have every academic egghead of all history, I don't care how, what kind of machines they have, what kind of testing they want to do, I don't care whether it's carbon-14, I don't care if it's radioactive dating, I don't care what kind of, you know, dating process they use. If you put that stone in front of them, that stone is 30 seconds old. Mm-hmm. Jesus Christ just created it. Now you ask these scientists, okay, how old is that stone? What do you think they're going to come up with? Everything God creates has a built-in appearance of age.
Exactly.
Everything he creates has a built-in appearance of age. All right? Adam, when he created Adam, Adam could have been 30 seconds old. You could have every scientist in the world examine him. How old is that man? Well, you know, by his bone structure, by his size, by this, that, and the other thing, the guy's about 30 years old. No, he's 30 seconds old. Mm-hmm. You see, he has the built-in appearance of age. And until these quote-unquote scientists realize that everything has that appearance of age, then all of their theories are flawed. Mm-hmm. And I'm telling you, I'll go to my grave telling you, God created the entire universe in 6 days. All right? Even though people look at me like, well, this guy's insane. There's no way that happened. And I'm just simply saying, amen, if you look at it, even scientifically, you can see the truth of it. But we have so crowded God out of everything. And where did it start? Where did it start? I just read it in Romans. Where did it start? When they didn't see fit to give God thanks anymore, God gave them over to a depraved mind. See, that's what happens. Jesus Christ said, I thank thee, Father, that thou hast hidden these things from the wise and the prudent of this age and has revealed them to babes. Because if people are just going to be arrogant and they're just going to say, well, I know it all, and science is really God, not God, and then God just blinds their eyes. He blinds their eyes. So when we're reading things like this, I think it still has a lot to say to us today. We have so try to minimize God's creative power. All right, we have so tried to minimize it, and when we do that, I really believe that we go deeper and deeper down this road of just being thankless and being ungrateful. Just imagine if you had a house, beautiful, beautiful home, and you gave it to some people who were really were homeless. And then they just completely trashed it, completely, totally trashed the whole thing. Well, how would you feel about that? I tell you what, it was, first of all, it shows such an ungrateful spirit, such a thankless, ungrateful spirit that they could not appreciate this incredible gift that you gave them. But I tell you what, I think you'd be pretty, you probably really regret doing it, because they just showed themselves to be just ungrateful pigs, and that's what's happening all over this world today in regards to God. And then he says this in verse 7, he gathers the waters of the sea together as a heap, he lays up the deeps in the storehouses. In other words, you know, it's God that sends us the rain. And I was just talking about, man, this California is really, really hurting now, but nobody seems to understand it. This is spiritual, man. It's God speaking to us. In verse 8, he says, let all the earth fear the Lord, let all the inhabitants of the world stand in awe of him. For he spoke and it was done, and he commanded and it stood fast. In other words, it didn't take 15 billion years out of some big bang out of nowhere to just evolve. No, he spoke and it was done. And verse 10, it says, the Lord nullifies the counsel of the nations and he frustrates the plans of the peoples. I mean, people, if they're just going to be at war with God, defy God, it's all going to end up in a dead end, and it just, you know, it totally implode. And verse 11 says, the counsel of the Lord stands forever, the plans of his heart from generation to generation. In other words, you know, nobody can change that. Not all hell itself can change it. In a sense, I think sometimes the devil must be the most frustrated personality in the universe, because he can't change this, man. The counsel of the Lord stands forever, the plans of his heart from generation to generation. It says, verse 12, blessed is the nation whose God is the Lord, the people whom he has chosen for his own inheritance. Now, to be blessed is a nation. All right, this nation was once a nation that God was our Lord. You know, this nation was founded on biblical principles, the God of the Bible and Jesus Christ. All right, it just flat out was. And how he blessed this nation incredibly. But now we're on our way out. We're on our way down. We're finished. We're through. It's over. It's done. I mean, anybody with any wisdom can see that this isn't the same nation. In verse 13, the Lord looks from heaven. He sees all the sons of men from his dwelling place. He looks out on all the inhabitants of the earth. He who fashions the hearts of them all, he who understands all their work. The king is not saved by a mighty army. A warrior is not delivered by a great strength. A horse is a false hope for victory, nor does it deliver anyone by its great strength. Behold, the eye of the Lord is on those who fear him, on those who hope in his loving kindness, to deliver their soul from death and to keep them alive in famine. Our soul waits for the Lord. He is our help and our shield. For our heart rejoices in him because we trust in his holy name. Let your loving kindness, O Lord, be upon us according as we have hoped for in you. And just winding this psalm down, you know, it says the Lord looks from heaven and he sees all the sons of men. Now, here's the thing. He sees everything, obviously. Mm-hmm. And he's watching men. And he's observing men. I mean, you know, there's not one thing that man can say or do or even think without God knowing it, right? Even the psalm says he knows our thoughts from afar. I mean, here's the thing. This is what it's talking about when he talks about we need to fear this God. He says he looks from heaven, sees all the sons of men, and from his dwelling place he looks out and on all the inhabitants of the earth. He's looking at men. But what does it take for most men to look at God?
Calamity.
Oh, yeah. There was a song many years ago, the lyrics of a song by Leonard Cohen. It says, and Jesus was a sailor when he walked upon the water, and he spent a long time watching from his lonely wooden tower. And when he knew for certain that only drowning men could see him, he said, all men will be sailors then until the sea shall free them. And I thought, you know, that's pretty profound, because very often people can't give God the time of day until things really get bad for them, right? Until they're drowning in something, right? Mm-hmm. Then all of a sudden they can see God, right? But he's watching men, you know. And then he says in verse 15, he who fashions the hearts of them all, he who understands all their works. I mean, we are told in very clearly that God knows the heart, man. You know, the heart is deceitful above all things and desperately wicked, and only God can know the inner motives of the heart, the workings of the heart. Have any of us ever seen a motive? I mean, we could probably detect a motive, but God can see it all, man. And verse 16, it says, king is not saved by a mighty army, a warrior is not delivered by great strength. You know, apply it to this country. There's no way we're going to be saved by our smart bombs and our nukes, the Marine Corps, our aircraft carriers. I mean, we're on our way down. I mean, we are just really on our way down because we put our hope in all this stuff. And how many people would put their hope in the government? You know, I think the government is going to solve their problems. Oh, the government is the problem, you know. And in verse 17, a horse is a false hope for victory, nor does it deliver anyone by its great strength. Behold, the eye of the Lord is on those who fear him, on those who hope in his loving kindness. Now, that's the whole thing, those who fear God. And I've said it many, many times, to fear God means, okay, we recognize that we're going to have to be accountable to him. And therefore, we're going to live our lives accordingly. You know, if we feel tempted to do something that he said don't do, we got to think, okay, well, you know, I really want to do this, but I'm not going to do it because God's watching me. Now, that's fear of God. That's fear of God, right? He says, 19, to deliver their soul from death and to keep them alive in famine. Now, this is the thing. God has said this over and over again, and so many promises throughout the scriptures. And God basically has said this. He said it, I think, pretty plain, that if we obey him, you know, we really increase the possibility of extending our life in this world. Mm-hmm. We really do. We are told in Psalm 139, that you know, God has basically ordained all of our days in terms of our life is concerned. But I do feel very strongly that we can cut those days short. You know, in Psalm 139 it says this: for you formed my inward parts, and you wove me in my mother's womb. I will give thanks to you, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Wonderful are your works, and my soul knows it very well. My frame was not hidden from you when I was made in secret and skillfully wrought in the depths of the earth. Now, when he uses that phrase, in the depths of the earth, what does that mean? It's poetic, but what does it mean? What he's saying is here, skillfully wrought in my mother's womb. But why does he say in the depths of the earth? Well, we're made from dust. From dust thou art, to dust thou shalt return, right? Mm. And he goes on and says, your eyes have seen my unformed substance, and in your book were all written the days that were ordained for me, when as yet there was not one of them. Now that's what's interesting to me, is that God has ordained the number of days that we have on this earth. But people don't realize it. You know, we can cut these days short by any number of ways. We really can. By defying God, by disobeying God. And I think what's kind of interesting is that I've got so many magazines and articles in regards to aging and how it's just become the holy grail of mankind to try to extend their life. But God is saying this, look, if you just obey me, all right, you really increase the possibilities of extending your life in this world. Because our whole body is so designed that if we defy God and his moral laws, our body works against us. I don't care whether our blood pressure goes up, that takes all kinds of stresses and tolls on our body, and this type of thing. Now, I'm not saying that if we obey God, we're going to live to be 99 years old. But I am saying this, God has ordained our days, but there's so many ways that we can cut that short by just defying him. And when we're reading right here in Psalm 33, and it says in that night, verse 19, to deliver their soul from death and to keep them alive in famine. I mean, when people obey God and they try to honor God, he does so much for them, and it does so much for them physically, mentally, emotionally, spiritually, in every way, right? But it all works against us if we defy him, right? It really does. And sometimes we really got to step back and look at life and just say, well, what is life all about? What am I here for? What am I doing? And I think I may have shared this last week. I'm not sure, but this was the Mental Floss. This is a magazine that I get. Here's the big questions that people ask today. Big questions. What does outer space smell like? Who invented the word Twitter? Why isn't cat food mouse flavored? Can cuteness stop aging? Who was the most important chicken farmer in military history? What do I do with all the cheese whiz? How Chinese is Chinese food? I mean, these are really profound questions, right? And you think, well, that's just the Mental Floss, you know. But I'm telling you, this is this week's Time Magazine. is Time Magazine. And this is the answer issue. Everything you never knew you needed to know. Now, here's Time Magazine, front cover. And here's some of the questions. How often do we blink? Where should we sit to catch a foul ball? What is the longest word? How happy is the middle class? What is the beer capital of America? When did yawning begin? How do you make a Yorkie poo? In other words, breed a Yorkie, dog. When will we all be obese? Oh, that's a good one. How much hair is on your head? They had one down here that says, what is the meaning of life? I says, oh, really? Really? They got that on there? They got that down there. But then I opened it up, and, it has nothing to do with what is the meaning of life. Instead, what is the good life? You know what I'm saying? About some guy who lived to be 109 years old, and, his secret to life was he just didn't get irritated a lot. Well, that doesn't tell you what the meaning of life is. Look at the shallowness that just reigns supreme. I don't care. You have a front cover of Time Magazine. Are these important questions? No. Nobody's asking, well, what am I here for? What's going to happen to me after I die? Is there a God? Is there a heaven? Is there a hell? Is there a judgment? Did we all just evolve from snot, or did we come directly from the hand of God? Who is this God? See, these are questions we don't ask. We're so shallow, aren't we? Mm-hmm. But I'm telling you, you look at what God is saying in His Word. Like, for example, God says in the commandments, honor your mother and father, and the promise is that you may live a long life. Well, you can honor your mother and father and die young, but people have to understand something here. That promise is basically saying this: if you honor your parents, you've just increased the possibility of extending your life, because right. Your parents are saying, hey man, don't hang around with that riffraff over there, don't hang around with those criminals over there, don't hang around with that gang over there, don't drink and drive, don't use drugs, all right, you really need to apply yourself, for your future. And if you say, well, I really want to join that gang over there, but my parents said not to, so I'm going to honor them, now you've just increased the possibility of extending your life, see? Yeah. And God also said this is not in the commandments, but it deals with one of the commandments where God said this: we are to have honest and just weights. He says this in Deuteronomy, that you may prolong your days in the land that I'm giving you. Now, if we're honest people, if we're truthful people, if we're people of integrity, just guess what? We've just increased the possibility of extending our life in this world. Now, how is that possible?
Piss anybody off.
Yeah.
Get sued, well, lose your livelihood and get sick, all kinds of things.
Well, let's just say that you're a dishonest person. You're always lying, cheating, stealing, conniving something from somebody, right? And let's just say that you never get caught, never go to prison, never go to jail, right? You never get murdered because somebody's ticked off. Let's just say you escape all those consequences, but you still increase the possibility of shortening your life. How?
You're going to be worried.
Yes. See, it's taking a toll on your body. Your body is being stressed. We're told in Proverbs that the righteous are as bold as lions, but the wicked flee when no one is pursuing them. All right? The wicked person, he's always looking over his shoulder. And if he happens to see a cop car parked out in front of his house, what happens to his heart? What happens to his heart rate? What happens to his blood pressure? What happens? All of a sudden he's stressed. It may not have nothing to do with him, but he's always stressed because of his defiance of God. And now it's shortening his days, right? Yeah. It's working against his body, right? And, like I'm saying, I don't want to beat that to death, but I tell you, it really says a lot when we're looking at things from God's perspective. And I'm telling you where it starts. It starts with a thankful heart. It starts with gratefulness, appreciation for God and the things that He has given us, the things that He has blessed us with, just the marvels that He's given us. There's hardly a day goes by that I don't thank God for my health and my eyesight. I mean, what a marvel, what a gift, what an incredible gift. I mean, there's so many things that we really ought to be really thankful for. And I've said many times that, what wouldn't you be willing to give up for $1 million? Would you be willing to give up your eyesight for $1 million, or your hearing, or the use of your arms or your legs? Would you be willing to give up your kids? What would you be willing to give up? And I'm telling you, there's probably a multitude of things that we would not exchange for $1 million, which makes us multimillionaires if we really stop to think about it. But a lot of times we just always moan and groan that we don't have two nickels to rub together. But man, just look at the way God has blessed us. But what happens? We don't appreciate it. That's what it says in, I just read in Romans there, because they didn't see fit to acknowledge God anymore, that God gives them over to a depraved mind. And when we do not see fit to honor God anymore, and then he gives us over to this depraved mind, what's the end result of that? Because it says right here in Romans, it says, for since the creation of the world, his invisible attributes, his eternal power and divine nature have been clearly seen, being understood through what has been made, so they are without excuse. For even though they knew God, they did not honor him as God or give thanks, but they became futile in their speculation. Mm-hmm. And their foolish heart was darkened, professing to be wise, they became fools and exchanged the glory of the incorruptible God for an image of the, in the form of corruptible man and of birds and of four-footed animals and crawling creatures. Therefore, God gave them over to the lusts of their hearts. And then it goes on to say this. Look at what happens when we don't honor God. Thank God. We're not appreciative of God. We don't give him that place of honor. It says this. This is the end result. And just as they did not see fit to acknowledge God any longer, God gave them over to a depraved mind to do the things which are not proper, being filled with all unrighteousness and wickedness and greed and full of envy and murder and strife and deceit and malice. They are gossips, slanderers, haters of God, insolent, arrogant, boastful, inventors of evil, disobedient to parents, without understanding, untrustworthy, unloving, unmerciful. And although they know the ordinance of God that those who practice such things are worthy of death, they not only do the same, but also give hearty approval to those who practice it. Now look at this. Look at this is what the end result of being ungrateful pigs. Look at our society. Does this characterize our society?
Yeah, really.
When it says being filled with all unrighteousness and wickedness and greed and full of envy and murder and strife and malice, they are gossips, all right, slanderers, haters of God, insolent, arrogant, boastful, inventors of evil, disobedient to parents, without understanding, untrustworthy, unloving, unmerciful. This characterizes our nation, our society, our culture, doesn't it? But does anybody see where the root cause of that is? It's being ungrateful, being unthankful, not appreciating God, not honoring God, not giving him thanks, not giving him the glory, the praise that is his due. This is the end result, right? And, you know, that list there that God just listed there, this is the end result of just being ungrateful pigs. But, you know, we are told in what it's going to be like just before the Lord's return or just before at the end of the world. It pretty well characterizes it in 2 Timothy chapter 3, where it says this, but realize this, that in the last days difficult times will come, for men will be lovers of self and lovers of money and boastful and arrogant, revilers, disobedient to parents, ungrateful, unholy, unloving, irreconcilable, malicious, gossips, without self-control, brutal, haters of good, treacherous, reckless, conceited, lovers of pleasure rather than lovers of God, holding to a form of godliness, although they have denied his power. See, this is what's predicted in the last days, but we can see it clearly, right? Where does it all begin? By being thankless, by being unappreciative, you know, by not giving God the credit, the honor, the glory. Yeah.
There's a verse just beyond what you just read that says people are always looking for the knowledge but denying
It
says right after that, avoid those people.
Yeah, it goes on to say this, holding to a form of godliness, although they have denied his power, avoid such men as these. And it also
says,
it says this, always learning and never able to come to the knowledge of the truth. Now, this is our society, this is our world, all right? Knowledge is exploding exponentially, and that was predicted to be a sign of the last days, but we're not coming to the knowledge of the truth. Oh, we got all this knowledge here. You know, how often do we blink, and what's the beer capital of the world, and where did yawning begin? But it says knowledge is increasing, but never coming to the knowledge of the truth, right? And so it says here in Psalm 33, I'm not going to even try 34. I just do this every week, it seems like. Okay, in that verse 8:19, it says, to deliver their soul from death and to keep them alive in time of famine. Our soul waits for the Lord, for he is our help and our shield. Now, what are we waiting for as a society, as a nation? I'm going to paraphrase this. Our soul waits for the government, for he is our help and our shield. Isn't that what happened today? People are putting their hope and their trust and their faith in the government. This government can't find its own behind with a compass.
It goes beyond that, too. The government's almost demanding that we worship it.
It does. And the government's going to come out and just tell me, hey, God's wrong on these issues, and we're right. And if you don't agree with us, we're going to send you to some re-education camp and brainwash you into becoming politically correct. That's what's coming. But we wait for God. You know, not for man, not for the government, all right? Because why? He is our help and our shield. And in verse 21, for our heart rejoices in him because we trust in his holy name. See, that's the thing. What do we rejoice in? I mean, you know, we rejoice in God. Why? Because we trust in him. He's a good God. He's a holy God. He's a righteous God. We know in our heart of hearts, man, he's too good to be unkind, too wise to make mistakes. And, you know, you just anchor yourself in him, and you really have a refuge. You really, you know, this whole world is going to hell in a handbasket. But, man, you have a purpose, and you have your refuge. You have your strength, and you have a hope, right? Other people don't have it. And last verse of Psalm 33, verse 22 says, let your loving kindness, O Lord, be upon us according as we have hoped in you. Now, see, that's a twofold thing. First of all, it's letting your loving kindness be upon us, Lord. Well, that's contingent on what? According as we have hoped in you. Now, if we're going to hope in God, it means that we put our trust in him. It's not just, you know, head acknowledgement, but we're living for him. That proves that we put our hope in him. And if we're living for him, then, you know, he is going to be our refuge. He is going to be our strength. He is going to be our fortress. Anybody have more to add or share?